So today, then, the first Sunday of Advent, it sort of means that the official countdown to Christmas has begun. I'm sure, like me, you've started to notice some hints and clues that Christmas is on its way, and whether that is the long-awaited John Lewis television advert, which I very much enjoyed this year, brought a tear to my eye, or perhaps it's the Christmas trees that have been chopped down and lined up on the side of the roads, ready for people to buy and decorate, or whether you noticed that mince pies this year came out not very long after Easter, which is very, very strange, very early. And all those things sort of tell us that even before it's actually time, even long before the 25th of December, we seem to be obsessed, maybe caught up in bringing the celebrations and the festivities about as soon as we can. And perhaps you've noticed, like me, year after year, it seems to get sooner and sooner that sort of Christmas is coming. It's very much on our minds, even before Advent. And perhaps that's unsurprising, really, when we know that Christmas brings with it such joy and such celebration. At the end of the Old Testament, we find Israel in exile, hoping and waiting in prayerful expectation for the coming of the Messiah. And we know that Israel looked back to God's past gracious actions towards them on their behalf, in leading them out of Egypt, of course, in the Exodus. And on this basis, they called once again for God to act for them. And in the same way, the church today, us, during Advent, we look back on Christ's coming to the world at the Nativity, but we also look forward in eager anticipation to the coming of Christ's kingdom, when he will return for his people. And a favourite Advent hymn of mine is O Come, Emmanuel. And I think that perfectly represents the church's cry during the Advent season. And such hope, I think, is conveyed in the words, "Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee." What a promise! And how fundamental to our faith is that hope, the hope that we have in that day, the day of the coming of our Saviour, when justice will reign and where sorrow will be no more. As Christians, we long to bring about that day. So we've just heard a little bit from Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, and what we hear from Paul is this sort of pointing the Thessalonians to the second coming of the Lord Jesus with all his saints, is what he says. And Paul urges the Thessalonians to prepare for that day. And I think that's the sort of crux of his message in that section, is to do good as they wait for Jesus' return. And he urges them to abound in love for one another as they wait, and for all. And this attribute of extending love to all will characterize those who participate in the second coming in that special day, and is one that equally applies to us, the church, today. Perhaps it helps to imagine that you are the recipient of that letter. You are being read that letter that Paul has written. I wonder how his words and his challenge and his encouragement could influence our own personal Advent journeys this year. Speaking of journeys, allow me to transport you to Nigeria. In Nigeria, many are waiting. Families are longing for the day to arrive when they can know what it is to be healthy and to thrive. Malaria is a leading cause of child death in the country. Around 250,000 Nigerian children die every year from the disease. And that's a really troubling statistic, I'm sure you'll agree. But almost everyone in Nigeria is at risk of contracting malaria. It's particularly dangerous for pregnant women and children under 5. I'm sure you're all familiar with mosquito nets, and they are distributed by Nigerian government. They are very effective. However, There is no use having a net if you don't know how to use it effectively. And that is such a key problem in the distribution of nets, that people have them, however, they don't have the awareness and the knowledge to know how to use them effectively. And I was speaking to one of our partners from Nigeria last week, and he visits communities, and he actually was able to relate stories to me of times where he's seen them nets being used incorrectly. And some of the examples he gave were that in sort of the fishermen, the community were using them as nets, not putting them on their beds. And then there was another instance where he went into a home and they were draped on the windows as sort of curtains. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the most unusual is that one woman wore her net as a wedding dress. So you can see how there's a widespread lack of awareness there. It's also the responsibility of the government to supply medication for malaria free to the public sector. But in reality, stocks are often depleted, and then that results in very poor communities having to pay for their treatment. People are then forced to buy their treatment from chemists where the staff aren't actually medically trained to do malaria testing. So tests are really undertaken. And in these poor communities, which are made up largely of subsistence farmers, malaria then forces those who are suffering with the disease to spend what little income they have on their treatment. And that means they often have to go without food, and it prevents them from sending their children to school as well. So like I said, women are particularly vulnerable to malaria, especially during pregnancy, as during that time the immune system has to work extra hard. So what you find with women is they are juggling working on the farm, looking after their children, then taking responsibility for any health matters in the family, also then buying the treatment for any illnesses. So when a woman is taken ill with malaria, it often affects the entire household. One woman who we have met through our partners is Martha Bako, age 22. Martha lost her first and only baby, Blessing, to malaria just a few weeks after she gave birth. Because she is unsure how malaria is caught, she just doesn't know how to prevent it. And like so many, she doesn't realise the importance of using a mosquito net correctly. And subsequently, she gets malaria roughly once every 6 weeks. And Martha isn't alone in this, it's quite usual. In fact, she knows of at least 15 children in her community who have died as a result of the disease. And then I thought I'd share some of her own words with you this morning. She says, "Sometimes I think for minutes, sometimes hours about the baby, and especially when I see those that gave birth, I get sad. I sometimes want to forget the whole episode. I can't really say how you get malaria, but I think it's from the river water I fetch when I drink it. To prevent it, first of all, I would stop drinking the water. In the future, I want good health, money to meet my basic needs, good food, and if God gives me children, something that will help me give them the best things in life." And Christian A believes that Martha's hopes can and should become a reality. So what is Christian Aid doing about this problem? Well, Christian Aid partners, to give you an example, the Anglican Diocese of Jos, which is in Nigeria, was established in 1990, and they set up the Centre for Gospel Health and Development, and that was established in 1994. It was set up as the health and social development arm of the Anglican Church there. So it is a faith-based NGO, and they have over 20 years' experience working in health, humanitarian, and development projects as well. So we talked a bit about the nets. And Christian Aid, together with its partners, absolutely recognises the importance of net distribution You may be familiar with our Nets for Life program, perhaps, which was extremely successful in reducing malaria incidence by 50% in women and children under five. However, we must consider net distribution as one part of a much wider project which focuses on prevention, but also education and advocacy. So a three-pronged approach, if you like. So education then. Through our partners, we are training community health agents who will go out into communities. You saw them go out into a school on the film briefly, but also churches like this. Perhaps somebody would come in and share how to protect yourself from malaria using the nets at a church service. Community groups, they go in and they educate people about the dangers of malaria, of mosquitoes, and how to prevent it. So in secondary schools, we might encourage people to visit health centres and to tell anybody in the child's family who is pregnant to definitely get along to a health centre and get checked out. And as you saw in the video, for junior schools and junior children, partners use a lot of sort of visual elements, games and songs as well, to raise awareness. Advocacy. So we enable communities to demand their healthcare rights from the government and play an active part in strengthening local healthcare systems. So we're really about enabling them to use their voice for good. So our partners also seek to influence state governments on health planning and investment in primary healthcare services. And they are developing a good relationship with the state. They're taking advocacy to state level to ensure that the right drugs are always available to these communities and are always free. Let me just introduce you to another woman we've met through our partners called Dorothy Okofu. Staff nurse and midwife Dorothy works in the local health centre facilities in Ora Eri, centrally located in the community. And Dorothy was trained by Christian Aid partners in the management of malaria. And with further funding, we can train more staff in clinics like these, just like Dorothy. And again, in her own words, Dorothy says, "I have delivered at least 500 babies in my career, and it's the best part of my job by far. Today, I delivered a healthy baby boy to a mother. She didn't contract malaria during pregnancy because we made sure she had access to antenatal sessions and preventative treatments. We want to bring about more happy days like this, but we really do need your help. Waiting can be an uncertain time, can't it? Imagine the anxious wait of a woman in Nigeria for the safe arrival of her baby. And imagine too the troubled wait of a child in Nigeria for their parent to feel well enough to look after them properly again. In the video, you might not have picked it up, but what really stood out to me was the quote from the Jonathan James, who was a Christian Aid partner-trained community health agent. And this is what he said in the video. He said, "People are waiting for this day to come. When they realize that Christian Aid is coming to give nets and there is no money that they are supposed to bring, they are so happy and excited." I thought those were the perfect words for this first Advent Sunday. People are waiting for this day to come. So this Christmas, we are asking you, our supporters, to join us once again in delivering precious gifts to communities in Nigeria. To give you an idea of what your gifts could provide, just £3 could buy a life-saving mosquito net, £33 could train a healthcare worker in malaria prevention and treatment, and £45 could provide an entire class of 30 children with information about malaria and help them understand how to stay safe from this deadly disease. The really good news is the UK government are going to match every pound that is donated, meaning double the difference for people living in poverty. So let's use this Advent season to consider the ways we may hasten a day of rejoicing for others. We've just sung Joy to the World. It's a favourite of mine. And I love the line, let every heart prepare him room. Let us prepare our hearts to receive the love and hope of Christ, that we may abound in love for one another and for all, as Paul urges the church in Thessalonians. Let every heart prepare him room. Let us, like Jesus, be a precious gift to others. Let that day they have been waiting for arrive. Thank you.